Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
What I believe happened is she probably said something she shouldn't have said. This argument escalated. He might have shoved her. Maybe he hit her. Maybe he shoved her and she hit her head on a counter. It was not premeditated. Whatever happened, it escalated to a physical confrontation. He was much bigger than her, much stronger than her. Accidental death. And he cleaned the whole thing up and got away with it. Now that's my theory, because this woman has not been heard from, seen, no credit card activity, no phone activity. You don't just disappear unless somebody wants you to disappear.
Sometime between May 16th and May 25th, 2020, 53-year-old Dawn Blankenheim simply vanished from Chico, California. There was no isolated event or indication that foreshadowed her disappearance. But like with every missing person, Dawn didn't just disappear. Dawn's story is a cautionary tale. The story of a bright, shining soul with so much potential, but haunted by multiple generations of trauma before her life even began, and woven through its entirety. While we can't say that Dawn's disappearance is an extraordinary mystery, we can say this: her life was one worth living. She was a much-loved mother, sister, daughter, and friend. And though Dawn vanishing is not entirely an enigma, there are many unanswered questions, disturbing circumstances, and subtle clues that there's more to Dawn's story than what appears on the surface. Stick with us as we dig in and explore Dawn's story. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 365 of The Vanished, Dawn Blankenheim's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices and audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. This spring, we were contacted by someone who believed she saw Dawn shortly before her disappearance. And that person asked us to cover her case. She was able to put us in touch with Dawn's loved ones. We talked to several people for Dawn's story, with the priority of feeling like we walked away from each interview with a better grasp of who Dawn was and what had taken place in her life. One of the people we spoke to most extensively was Dawn's closest friend, Betsy, who Dawn met over 4 decades ago, and we asked her to share the things she cherished most about Dawn.
So I met Dawn in junior high school through our church youth group. I think we were 13 years old, 12, 13, something like that. She was funny. She was just kind of happy and kind of always smiling. She was just kind of a fun personality. Well, she went to a different high school than I did. So really just doing the youth group is really the connection that we had. Her mom and my mom became really good friends as well. She did definitely like to dance, and you know, she was definitely into the boys and that kind of thing. She actually introduced me to my husband when we were in high school, when we were 16. He was her neighbor. So he went to the same school she did. And so they were friends. So she introduced to us. That was that. The three of us hung out a lot together. So we did a lot of stuff together, just regular teenage stuff, going to the mall, going to the beach.
Dawn never had a smooth childhood, and her home life was tumultuous and mired with turmoil from the time she was very young. Betsy told us what she knew of Dawn's family life and what Dawn had shared with her about it over the years of their friendship.
She has two sisters. I knew, you know, her parents, so they were both big drinkers and alcoholics. So she had kind of a rougher home life, but she kind of hid it. You know, she didn't want other people to know. She had a hard time, I know, especially with her mom. Her dad was kind of a loud, funny drinker, and her mom was more of a quiet wine drinker. That Dawn hid a lot of what happened at home in the evenings. I think she had to take care of her mom a lot. Yeah, she had a hard time. Life was not easy for Dawn. Stuff that we kind of knew a little bit about, but she didn't complain about it. You know, she didn't complain about her mom. I knew probably more about it because my mom was good friends with her mom. So I heard stuff more from my mother, I think, than from Dawn. My mom was always a little bit worried. They did a lot of stuff. They were in bridge groups and things like that together. And so I know my mom was worried about her mom. She left her house at one point and actually lived with us. My parents took her in for a semester, our senior year, because home was kind of rough. She was so stoic, you know, she hid it from us. I just knew that she was having a hard time with her mom. Her mom was drunk a lot. And when she came to stay with us, we were 17. So she was older. You know, she had like boy problems. She was having a hard teenage go, you know, and it was hard at home with both her parents drinking. You know, at some point she had a really bad breakup with a boyfriend and she just really had a hard time. So I think just to take a break, she came and lived with us. And then at one point, I remember my mom telling me not very long ago that she just decided that it was time for her to go home, and she went home. But she was with us for about a semester, which, you know, in my book was really fun because she shared my room and she switched schools and came to my school, I think, for a few months and then switched back to her school. She got a break, which is what I think she really needed.
After high school, Dawn and Betsy went off to college together. But Betsy married the man Dawn had introduced her to as teenagers, and they lived in couples housing while Dawn lived in the dorms. Betsy shared with us that she, her husband who she met through Dawn, and Dawn were all very close friends who went to the same university and remained close even though their lives took different paths.
The three of us were really together a lot. You know, we did a lot of stuff, the three of us together. All three of us came up here to go to Chico State for college, but she was on campus and my husband and I were in off-campus dorms. So we kind of we didn't do a lot of stuff together during college time. She kind of made friends, you know, over at her dorm. She was kind of more into the party life and the fraternity stuff. She met her ex-husband in college and they kind of had a wild, kind of a volatile relationship, I remember. My husband and I kind of steered clear sometimes because they were just had a different path. She was more into the party stuff than I was. But she graduated from Chico and in a degree with fashion merchandising. And she got married shortly. I dropped out of school and got married. So, you know, my life just got kind of busy because I had kids really early and she didn't. Not that we weren't friends, but we didn't hang out all the time anymore, you know, just because we had different paths. But she wound up getting married in 1988 to that guy that she met in college. Kind of a, you know, they kind of had a relationship. I think there was a lot of fighting and he actually wound up going to prison at one point. And they had a little boy. Her husband did wind up going to prison for embezzlement. And she was, you know, and then she was home alone with a baby and had a really hard time with that. And I know her husband lied to her. She thought she was moving down to Napa and he wound up going to jail and she wound up with nothing, you know, no place to live and a baby and had to kind of figure it out, which, you know, she always did. She's a smart girl, super book smart. My goodness. She always landed on her feet. That's one thing, you know, and she worked hard. She always had a couple of jobs, worked really hard, always. I mean, since she was 16, she's worked, or probably younger than that.
Dawn's marriage to Dan was rocky. And then Dan ended up going to federal prison for bank fraud when Tyler was very young, effectively ending their marriage and leaving Dawn a single mother to provide for and raise her son. We also interviewed Dawn's younger sister, Christy, and she told us about who Dawn was and what she remembers about Dawn's aspirations in life and how these events affected her ability to go after her dreams.
She's 6.5 years older than I. We grew up in San Jose. Parents are married, went to college, and we both have lived in Chico since we went to college. There's a middle sister who's 3 years between us. Dawn was an outgoing person, and she liked to dance. She did dance recitals, that sort of thing, when she was a little kid. That was her sport. She liked hair and makeup type of things. She wanted to be a wife and a mother. She wanted to be a homemaker. She went to college and she got married and had that kid she wanted. They got divorced. She was a single mom. The dad finally came back in the picture at some point, and he started paying child support, and they shared custody, kind of normal. She had him during the school year and he had him 2 weeks in the summer type of thing. He lives down in Southern California. We're in Northern California.
Despite the breakdown of her marriage, for a time, Dawn seemed happy. She loved having a child, she had a career, and she was able to do the things she enjoyed in life, probably for the first and only time in her lifetime.
She sold manufactured housing, like mobile homes, and was very successful at it. And so she lived in Chico and sold manufactured housing for a big company called Cousin Gary's, and she did that for a long time. And then regulations in California changed, and all the manufactured housing places started closing up, so she lost her job. And then she was working in a clothing store in downtown Chico for a few years, and then she didn't work for a while.
Dawn's longtime friend Roger also spoke with us for this episode and told us about how happy Dawn was when he met her through their mutual work in the community.
I was a friend of Dawn's and knew her for many years. I met Dawn probably close to 20 years ago in the early 2000s when she and I were both volunteers for the Chico Chamber of Commerce. Chico is a small city of 100,000 people about 90 miles north of Sacramento. And both Dawn and myself were active volunteer ambassadors for the Chico Chamber of Commerce. And we'd go to ribbon cuttings, the grand openings of small businesses, and would help in different volunteer functions, whether it be a barbecue or a picnic or assisting in different ways with the Chamber of Commerce. We were also members of a service organization, the Chico Noon Exchange Club, which is similar to Rotary or Lions Club. It's a service organization of businessmen and women that meet weekly for lunch and also promote and sponsor activities to raise money for local charities, children's charities. And also she was a member of the Chico Elks Lodge, which is a social club. And so Dawn was active and engaged in the community of Chico, California.
It was around this time period in Dawn's life that she began a long-term relationship with a man named Craig. Christy told us about Craig's tragic passing after his own long-term alcohol use compounded with other medical problems.
She had a long-time boyfriend named Craig, and they lived together for a long time, had a house together. Craig functioned as her son's stepdad. He passed away from liver cancer in 2014. Dawn was a heavy drinker, and she and Craig were heavy drinkers together. He died of liver cancer, and she took a alcoholic turn for the worse at that point. I don't think she really had another job after that.
If there was one constant in Dawn Blankenheim's life from birth until her disappearance at 53 years old, it was alcohol. Dawn's mother, Judy, who passed away after Dawn vanished, had nearly a lifelong struggle with alcohol, and her father was also a heavy drinker. causing her parents' relationship to be a roller coaster of fighting and psychological and emotional trauma for the entire family. But it wasn't just her own parents. Dawn's grandparents were also alcoholics, from what Christy told us. So we knew from our research for Dawn's story that alcohol was a deeply rooted intergenerational problem in her family. With all of this in mind, it's clear that as Dawn and her siblings grew up, it was a natural outlet to dampen and numb the emotions Dawn must have experienced as a young girl, who didn't have any real semblance of a childhood, because she had to grow up so quickly to care for the adults who had already been leaning on alcohol as a crutch for decades. This is what Betsy told us about Dawn's alcohol use.
Definitely alcohol played a huge role. You know, she did have trouble with drinking, and at one point in the later, when her son was a little bit older, when his dad got out of jail, he opted to go live with his dad, which would really hurt her. That was rough when he was a teenager. She really did try, and you know, she loved him to pieces and stuff, but she, you know, she had a hard time again, you know, with drinking, and poor Tyler got the brunt of it. Tyler saw a lot of stuff he shouldn't probably have seen and opted out. He did go to Chico State, though. He came back to go to school near his mom. I know Dawn would be upset because he wouldn't call. He didn't call a whole lot. Then his girlfriend and then wife. I know she kind of initiated a lot of stuff with Dawn for Tyler. Sometimes girlfriends do that. Call your mom, that kind of thing. I think Tyler liked to keep her at arm's length. He had to protect himself, for sure. It was hard. He had a hard upbringing, that's for sure. You know, he had his grandparents and stuff, but they were never lovey-dovey people. Dawn was drinking a lot when he was a baby and that kind of thing. And talked to my mom about it in the past, too. It's like, if she were my daughter and that were my grandson, he would be living with me.
We learned from Christy that Tyler had left Dawn's home to go live with his dad because of her relationship with Craig and his behavior when he was drinking, which Tyler didn't like. Referring to Craig as Dawn's husband, Dawn's friend Roger told us of the palpable pain and grief he saw in Dawn when Craig passed away, and the devastating effects it had on her already compromised health.
She lost her husband, and candidly, she took that with great pain and difficulty. As any of her friends or family knows, she drank too much. She was an alcoholic, and she did have, I believe, several DUIs driving under the influence. But I do believe that it was because she lost her husband and she unfortunately turned to alcohol to dull that pain. Understand, I'm not criticizing her. I'm just stating a fact. She was in her 40s when he passed away. It was a tragedy, and not expect that, you know, you would lose your husband in your 40s. Well, when she was sober, she was, you know, a very nice woman who, they said, volunteered her time and was very giving, fun to be with, always willing to help. And that was the nature of her volunteerism. That was part of her makeup. I think we both looked at trying to make Chico, the community of Chico, a better place. Unfortunately, you know, when she drank too much, she was unfortunate and changed like alcoholism will do to people. But I do believe it was fueled by the loss of her husband. That was her way of dulling the pain of life. But that also does come into play, I believe, in her vulnerability and what happened to her.
As if Roger's accounts of the events in Dawn's life foreshadowed her disappearance, Christy echoed his thoughts with her observation after Craig's death. Dawn continued to spiral, devastated by his passing, hurt by her only child's preference to live hours away with his dad, jobless and very much alone, with not much to numb a lifetime of pain and trauma except for the alcohol.
My parents helped pay her bills for that end couple of years of her life. And then she was forced to sell her home because she couldn't pay for it anymore. And then she lived off that money for a while. And it was during those last couple of years, she became more estranged from the family. You know, we were trying to get her sober. She became pretty ill with it. So in the last 6 months of her life, she was in the hospital like 4 or 5 separate times. for alcohol-related problems. She had cirrhosis. She had pancreatitis. Esophageal varices was one of her hospitalizations. I had her hospitalized once. I took her to Butte County Behavioral Health because she was saying she wanted to die. And they took her on a 72-hour 5150 hold. And she immediately went into DTs, the delirium tremens from alcohol withdrawal. So they put her in the hospital, and she was there for maybe 11 days. She did not want the help that was offered to her. So when she got out, she went right to the bar. So then 2 days after her last hospitalization was the last time she was seen or heard from. And I hadn't really talked to her in a while because when you have an alcoholic in your family and you've been trying for years to get them sober, one of her friends pointed out to me that she hadn't posted anything on Facebook for a while when she had been a regular poster and commenter. I had her blocked on my account, so I wasn't aware as much. I had disengaged for about 5 years from her, so I'm not too sure what had been going on, clearly, because I didn't want nothing to do with her anymore. But I did not expect her to disappear. I was expecting for her to die, but I was not expecting for her to disappear.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. We requested the basic missing persons report from the Chico Police Department, but were denied access to everything because Dawn's case is considered open and active. So we don't know what the police consider to be the exact date that Dawn disappeared. And we have seen both May 15th and 16th, 2020 listed as dates of last contact. But we aren't sure where that information came from, because we don't believe either is accurate. Christy told us that she reported Dawn missing on May 26, 2020, just 2 or 3 days after she realized that something had happened to Dawn, who had seemed on the brink of tragedy for some time already.
So I went over to her apartment where I knew she was living. It was really the first time I had been there. And I got there, I knocked on the door, and she did not answer. And the door was unlocked, so I went in, and she wasn't there. There was uneaten plates of food on her coffee table, 2 plates One was like leftover burrito, you know, not quite finished. And the other was like the remains of tacos. The doors and windows were open on the apartment and her air conditioner was on. Kind of looked around and went, huh. So I closed the windows and doors and turned off the air conditioner, right? And then I left. I figure maybe she was just out. Her purse and her cell phone were gone. And then I went back that night and she wasn't there.
To our knowledge, Dawn's cell phone has never been recovered, and we don't know if police were able to obtain records or information from it. But there is one event likely involving her phone that is an important clue in the timeline of her disappearance. This leads us to believe she disappeared later than the dates we found listed on posters and missing persons websites. We initially learned of this tip when an employee of the bar Dawn enjoyed visiting first contacted us, asking us to cover Dawn's story. In her email to us, she said that it was the night of May 17th, when she says she physically saw Dawn and a man named Oscar at the bar. We will explain more about who Oscar is later in the story. This is what the email said. For several years, we had these two regulars who would only frequent the establishment during the day. I could say the same for hundreds of others. However, these two stuck out. The reason being that the guy, Oscar, was or is in his early 40s and fairly good looking. Oscar was accompanied by an older woman named Dawn Blankenheim. Dawn was in her mid-50s. However, due to heavy alcohol use for over a decade, she looked to be closer to her 60s. Oftentimes, I would notice she would get heavily intoxicated. He drank as well, but would never get as drunk as she did. Also, some other odd things we noticed were that she was very infatuated with him. However, he called her his friend to everyone. She would also always be the one to pay for everything, which was weird considering he was young and able-bodied and spent a great deal of time bragging about his success in the film industry. So much so that if you speak to anyone, anywhere he frequented, they all would tell you the same thing. He is weird and brags about a lot of things people don't even ask about. So fast forward a few years to May 2020. COVID had just hit our state, and we were running the bar at a limited capacity until the official shutdown came through. Around May 16th, they came in together and proceeded to do the usual drinking together. She called for an Uber home around 9:30 p.m., but then canceled it. I've heard through the rumor mill that she ended up possibly going to the hospital after, but either way, she was with him last. This email gave us another lead in establishing the timeline of Dawn's disappearance. We asked Betsy if she knew any of the details about this call for a rideshare. Was it a phone record or financial transaction? We had so many questions in trying to determine what happened to Dawn, when, and where.
Right before she disappeared, she had canceled an Uber, so we knew where she was at one point on the 17th. She ordered like a ride service and then canceled it. And I have the address from where she ordered it, and that was on the 17th.
This is all we were able to learn about the call for a ride on May 17th. But it was pivotal for us in establishing the facts, because it seems that the missing persons listings for Dawn don't have very much information about her disappearance correct. And as always, we wanted to verify as much as we could. With Dawn's case, though, it wasn't entirely surprising that many of the details of her disappearance couldn't be confirmed, because as Betsy shared with us, the months prior to her disappearance were a rapidly increasing downward spiral.
So she went missing May of 2020, and she had probably for the year or two before that, you could just tell she was really, really going downhill. Like things were not going well. She couldn't really keep a job. Her health was suffering terribly. You could just tell she didn't look good. She didn't sound good. She didn't feel good. All that kind of stuff. And she was starting to be more like, almost like crazy. Like you talk to her just going, wow, what are you talking about? You know, she didn't make a sense a lot of times and it was hard to keep a story straight and, you know, that kind of stuff. So the last several months, she was kind of in and out of the hospital. It was always alcohol related. It would be for vomiting blood. She was malnourished. She'd go in for like abdominal pain. She had a lot of neuropathy, so her feet were in a lot of pain. They couldn't help her. Her ankles and her feet were really swollen. She couldn't really wear shoes. and her feet were killing her.
From what Betsy told us, it sounded like Dawn wasn't healthy enough to be able to walk or drive away on her own, which made Christy's account of finding Dawn's apartment abandoned with all of her belongings in it all the more chilling, and a clear sign that something had happened to Dawn.
She had a really hard time walking. Her last time in the hospital, they released her on May. I saw her on the 15th. They released her on the 16th, I believe. And her friend Oscar came to pick her up. That was the other thing. She was, again, very secretive with things like that. Like, she wouldn't let me come and pick her up. She didn't want me to know she was in the hospital that last time. I think her mom told Christy and Christy told me. And I went over there. So she stopped talking to Christy. She stopped talking to her mom. She was very angry. And so that last week when she got home, I think on the 16th, and then Oscar, you know, there was some screwiness on that weekend where I think she just wanted to hang out at Oscar's house or whatever. And I don't know what went on between the two of them.
At the time of her disappearance, Oscar had been in Dawn's life for some time, in a relationship that we don't know too much about. We do know that he had been helping Dawn, staying at her home, cooking, cleaning, and assisting in her care. Their relationship wasn't that simple, though. We were not able to interview Oscar for this episode, but we did speak with him via social media, and he openly shared with us that he was the last person to see Dawn, but didn't remember the exact date. He told us that he picked her up from the hospital on a Saturday afternoon, which must have been May 16th, and that she was not wearing a hospital gown, as noted in many news articles and on several missing persons' websites, but instead shared with us that when she left the hospital, she was wearing a hoodie and leggings. While most websites and news articles we found listed May 15th or May 16th as the date Dawn was last seen, we know she was seen at the bar with Oscar on the 17th, and that's when she ordered a rideshare and then canceled it. No one knows what happened after they left the bar, but Betsy shared what Oscar has said about the last time he saw Dawn.
She had been released from the hospital on the 16th, which is a Saturday, and she had been home. She left me a voicemail on that day, but she was home, and she wasn't in hospital gown because she got released, and Oscar picked her up. They wouldn't release her in a hospital gown, so that can't be true. I don't know what went on between the two of them, but he says that the last time he saw her, I believe, was on the 18th. I think he drove her home from his house. That was a Monday. When I talked to him, he told me that he had gone over there to get his backpack, and her door was unlocked. So he went in to get his backpack, and he says he never saw her. I think he said her bedroom door was shut, and he just got his backpack and left and never actually laid eyes on her. And then on Friday, I was on my way home from work, and Dawn's mom called and asked if I would check on Dawn because, you know, Dawn wouldn't answer. She wasn't talking to her mom, and she wasn't talking to Christy. She wouldn't answer phone calls. Dawn's mom had sent her a pair of shoes, a special pair of shoes or slippers or something, because her feet, and they hadn't gotten any response. So she didn't know if Dawn had picked him up. So she had asked me if I would go over to her apartment and see if Dawn got the shoes and check on her and see if she was okay. So I told her on that Friday that I would do that. And that was Memorial Day weekend. So I was on my way home when she called, which is, we live about 20 minutes apart. So I didn't, this is where I get personal. Like, I freaking kicked myself because I didn't go over until Monday because I don't know. I was just busy and whatever. So I didn't go over until Monday, and the package was still on her porch. I knocked and knocked, of course, and then I tried the front door, and the front door was unlocked. So I finally just went in. So when I went in, it looked like she was in an upstairs apartment, a second floor apartment, and she had a little balcony, and that door was open. Ceiling fans were on, and I can't remember if lights were on, but I know ceiling fan was on, the door was open, and then there was half-eaten food. There was like a plate on the kitchen counter that had, like, you know, one of those monster burritos on it that was like halfway eaten. And then on the couch was a littler plate with like little street tacos kind of partway eaten, which to me, in my mind, it's like she kind of lived on the couch for the last several months. She really didn't get up much. She didn't get dressed, usually. She had a hard time showering. There were a couple of times she asked me, like I would go to her house because she had such trouble walking, that I would go there so I could be there when she showered in case she fell. Anyway, so the plate was on the couch. Everything else was open. And then, you know, her purse was gone. It looked like she had a friend there, probably a guy, because that was a monster burrito. And that's just my perception. I don't know that for sure, but that's what it looked like. There were no flies. She did not eat very much at all. She would not have ordered a big-ass burrito like that for herself. Not very long before that either, I took her out to dinner. She was a hot mess. But she wanted to eat, but she couldn't. No, she took it all home, but she really couldn't eat. Anyway, it just looked like they, you know, were having food and then decided to go out and were planning on coming back. You know, it just looked like, you know, you left the house and thinking you were coming right back.
At this point, Dawn's mother, Judy, her sister, Christy, and Betsy were all convinced something terrible had happened. It simply wasn't possible for Dawn to just vanish, especially in such poor health. Betsy told us what she did next after seeing the apartment in a state that didn't appear to be abandoned or vacant.
I obviously was calling her phone, and I think her phone was dead, probably with her, but I didn't find her phone. I'm guessing it was in her purse. Anyway, so then I called around. I called her mom, of course, and told her what I found, and I called Christy, and I called that guy, Oscar, asking him, you know, when he saw her last, because she's not here or whatever. And so that's when he told me about the backpack and stuff. You know, we kept checking. I went back there. I think Christy went back there that night and was looking around, and she still wasn't back. And then the next day went back over there. And I know Christy went over in the morning, and then I met her. I went over from work, and that's when we called the police and reported her missing. And actually, I think on Monday we were calling hospitals and jails and looking around for her. And then we filed the missing persons report on Tuesday.
Christy told us that she went back to Dawn's apartment after setting up a method earlier on Memorial Day to see if Dawn or anyone had returned to the unlocked apartment when she returned to check on her sister again.
I kind of booby-trapped the front door just so I would know if it had been opened. You know, I put a piece of paper up high when I closed it, so if anybody opened it, the paper would fall out, right? And I went back the next morning, and she hadn't been there. And her physical condition was not good. I knew she didn't drive because she'd had DUIs and her truck was smashed. And that day I started calling her friends. So it was the second day. Started calling her friends. You seen her? You seen her? I texted her son. Have you heard from her? Nobody had seen or heard from her in a few days. And so I called Chico police and I filed a missing person on her.
In 2020, Memorial Day was Monday, May 25th. If Oscar's account of what happened to Dawn is credible, and we don't know if it is or isn't, that puts a week-long gap between the time Oscar said he last saw her and the time Dawn's mother, Christy, and Betsy realized there was a problem and no one could find Dawn. Unfortunately, if Oscar's credibility is thrown into question, as we will discuss later, that gap in time is even wider, with Betsy's recollection that she last saw Dawn in the hospital on May 15th, and she was released from the hospital on May 16th. And then there's the odd piece of the puzzle on May 17th, when Dawn, or someone using her phone, scheduled an Uber ride home but then abruptly canceled it before the driver arrived. We had no way of verifying the rideshare request or that May 16th was the day she was released from the hospital, due to privacy laws, and the Chico Police Department declined our records request. That leaves us to assume that police verified her hospital discharge on May 16th, with hospital staff having last seen her on that day, and obtained phone or financial records indicating that she scheduled a ride home on May 17th. If this timeline is accurate, we are left with a disturbing 8-day gap of time, in which only one person claims to have seen Dawn, and even told us he was the last to see her. So we knew we needed to explore that further and look to find out more about this man named Oscar. Christy told us about Dawn's relationship with Oscar.
She did have a relationship after Craig died. So she'd been hanging out with another guy named Oscar. She insisted they were just friends, but they went everywhere together and they slept together. So we all just assumed he was kind of her boyfriend, but not really. I had only met him maybe twice in all the times that they had known each other, but they did hang around each other a lot. He took her places and stuff like that. And they used to go to this one bar here in Chico all the time. And so they were seen at that bar pretty often together. So, and he was one of the people that I had called when I realized she wasn't around. I was like, hey, Oscar, have you seen her? And he said he hadn't seen her in a few days.
Betsy was only acquainted with Oscar, but she did share with us what she knew of him from what Dawn had shared with her and what she learned from others after Dawn vanished.
I don't know him that well. I know that they had like this love-hate relationship kind of thing. She used to always tell me he's like the brother she never had, is what she used to tell me, because they could fight like siblings, she would say. He helped her with a lot of stuff, but then they also fought about a lot of stuff. And one of the things was alcohol. You know, for a long time, I think he was supplying her with it. Then he was angry with her for how much she was drinking. And I know he was upset with her, you know, with the other people she was letting live in her apartment and stuff like that. I know he's upset about that too. But I don't know about his alcohol status. I don't know him other than what I knew from Dawn. For a long time, I was really, again, without really knowing him, I was very suspicious of him taking advantage of her. You know, yes, he would take her grocery shopping, but she'd also buy him his groceries. He would partake in that. And, you know, things like she'd let him use her car and then she wouldn't get it back. And honestly, he did help her with, she needed something fixed, stuff like that. He did help her in a lot of ways, I think. Plus, he kept her company. But then he also was a leech, too. I know there were times when she was asking for his help and he didn't help. And I think there was some sort of money thing where she had given him money or lent him money or whatever, and then kind of expected him to do what she wanted because he owed her money. So I can remember being over there one time and going to take her garbage was overflowing. And I was like, what's going on here? You know? So I went to take it out and she's like, oh no, she's like waiting for Oscar to take it out for her. But he would come over like he hadn't been there in a few days or whatever. And she was mad because she didn't want me to take it out. She wanted me to leave it for him. I was like, no, I'm not going to leave this. I think she expected him to help her and he did when it was convenient for him. And so sometimes he was helpful and sometimes he wasn't.
There were some other strange aspects about Oscar that Betsy picked up on, even though her interactions with him in person were brief.
I met him briefly, I think, at Tyler's wedding. And then I talked to him on the phone when we were looking for her. He's one of the first ones I called. I mean, after I called Christy. And he did film her son's wedding. From what I can tell, I mean, you know, I never saw the video. And I'm not sure that Dawn ever saw the video. That was another point of contention. She paid him up front for it. I'm not sure she ever got it. So I don't know if anybody ever saw the video.
After Dawn disappeared, Betsy told us that Oscar acted strangely, posting frequently to social media, but never making mention of Dawn being gone, or sharing a flyer, or correcting the mistakes about the dates she disappeared, or what she was wearing.
He never put anything on there, even at the time, which we all thought was kind of funny. I know, I think Christy was thinking that everybody just focused on him immediately and kind of wrongfully, but the last I heard, they still had like all his camera equipment and stuff and wouldn't let him have it back, the police. He didn't put anything out like on Facebook like he was looking for her, which I thought was kind of funny because he's on Facebook all the time, all about himself and all about his exercise and physique and all that business, promoting himself, it looks like. I don't know. It's weird. I think it's weird.
While Oscar's entire persona seemed bizarre, there were redeeming aspects about him, and he did things that did not paint him as a murderer, including driving across the state of California of his own volition to talk to Dawn's parents after she disappeared.
The Oscar guy, you know, he was thoroughly investigated as far as I know. They couldn't find anything. My mom died probably 6 months ago, and about 6 months before she died, she called up Oscar and said, can you come talk to me? And he went down and talked to her. He drove from here to San Jose, which is about a 3.5-hour drive, and sat in my parents' front yard and kept to the story that he had originally told police and, you know, looked my mom in her eyes and said, I don't know what happened. And he's a sketchy fella. But to me, that was like, he didn't have to do that, but he did anyway. So there's that in his favor. He's charming. You know, I think he's one of those people who's like super charming.
We contacted Oscar earlier this summer for an interview. At first, he flatly refused to talk via phone, but he continued to engage with us via social media and openly admitted that he was the last person to see Dawn. While he eventually did agree to do an interview, we were never able to connect via phone. But his messages to us were very candid about what his version of the story is, and he stated that Dawn's alcohol dependency and habit of putting herself in dangerous situations are what he believes led to her disappearance, which he told us he does not know the exact details of, except when he last saw her and what she was wearing at that time. We were curious about what he meant when he said Dawn put herself in dangerous situations, aside from drinking, and we wanted to dig deeper into that. We didn't expect to learn what we did. The man that Dawn had a long-term relationship with, Craig, who we discussed earlier, seemed to establish a benchmark for the type of person Dawn found herself attracted to. Betsy told us about their volatile relationship, and we started to see a pattern in the things that Betsy said about Craig and the behaviors of other men that Dawn allowed in her life.
Her significant other, Craig, lived with her for 10 years, maybe, something like that. You know, he wasn't always the greatest to her either. She didn't choose nice men. She chose men that they would all be drinkers as well, of course. And usually when they were drinking, they were not very nice. And she suffered some abuse. And I know she loved him a lot, even though he could treat her really nicely, but he could treat her badly too. Definitely was lonely after he died. The alcohol goes with that too. Start numbing all that pain.
After Craig's death, Dawn struggled financially and opened her home to a seemingly random assortment of people she encountered. Oscar was one of those people who was a consistent presence in her life for more than a fleeting moment. But he wasn't the only person that was a regular at Dawn's apartment. When Betsy went to her apartment on Memorial Day, she found a business card stuck in the door and was surprised to see what it said.
There was a business card in the front door from a probation officer looking for somebody named Miguel, because at that point, you know, for the last several months, she had been letting different people live in her apartment, you know, men usually, women sometimes too, but usually men that she met, I don't know how, on the internet or on Facebook or something. And she would let them live there. And anyway, apparently this Michael had given Dawn's address as his address to his probation officer. So the probation officer was verifying the address and left a note on her business card in the door. And I don't know anything about him other than the name Miguel that's on the card. I have a picture of the card and the note that was written on it. We gave that to the police.
We wanted to know how Dawn was meeting these people, if she was often in the hospital and on the brink of not being able to care for herself anymore. So we asked Betsy where these guests came from and how Dawn knew them.
At one point, we went through her entire contact list and called. We took pages. There were three of us that took pages of her contacts and called every single person in her phone to ask if they had seen her. And there were guys, you know, that she had just met online. I think she was doing dating site something or other, which I'm not familiar with that kind of stuff, but that's how she was meeting some of these guys. There was two names I wrote down that were kind of recent. Were the last Facebook messaging things that we had pictures of, and there were two names that were in contact with her. When I was looking at her Facebook things, it was somebody that I had never heard of, but it seemed like she was talking to, it might be somebody she met like on a dating site or something. I think he said something like, hey, you want to get together?
In a strange way, it made sense for multiple reasons that Dawn would seek out company. She was obviously depressed and lonely. She probably felt a lot of rejection and failure from childhood traumas outside of her control. She was also losing her ability to perform daily functions independently, And Betsy told us what her life was like in the months prior to her disappearance.
She had a hard time walking. Wherever she went with somebody that drove her. I mean, like Oscar would have to take her grocery shopping because she couldn't do it herself anymore. Or she would have groceries delivered. So wherever she met these people, it had to have been online, on Facebook and that kind of stuff. You know, I think she really was lonely. And, you know, she had a heart where she would, you know, if somebody was down and out, she would offer to help. The big fire out here that was near us, she had people living in her extra room that had lost their home in the fire. And I think, you know, she was lonely. They probably paid her some rent because she had, I don't know what her rent was, but she really didn't have a job. There were other men that she let in her apartment that were not upstanding citizens. And those ones, we don't know. I mean, Oscar might know of some of the names. I know I don't, other than that one, Miguel. There was one that I know, and I don't know his name, and he was out. I think he was out on parole, but I know he smashed some things up in her apartment when he was drunk. And I mean, she had some not nice characters there.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
We talked with Christy about what happened after she filed the initial police report, and if police took Dawn's disappearance seriously.
My parents have been swabbed by the police, and their DNA is in the database, and they have her dentals also. They were pretty reluctant to look for her because her apartment had no sign of a struggle. Her purse and her cell phone were gone. I kept calling on a daily basis. Finally, they started, I think, trying to investigate a little bit. They won't give me any information about that investigation because it is an ongoing investigation. So I don't even know what Chico police found. I have no idea. I'll tell you, so they started looking for, of course, one of their big people to look at was the Oscar guy. It turns out he was an ex-con. I didn't really know about that. And had been in prison for a while, but was out. I'm pretty sure he was just kind of living off my sister a little bit. She was always paying for them when they went out. And somehow, in some way, their investigation led them to search the dump here in Butte County. And according to Detective Tyler at the Chico PD, they searched the dump like 3 nights in a row with dogs and didn't find her. Something led them to believe that she was in the dump. And what I heard from them is that they had, as they were investigating Oscar, somehow they looked at video at the dump. And Oscar's truck had gone in like 2 days after she was gone. It turns out also that Oscar was arrested for a drunk in public like 2 days after the last time she was seen and around the time that his truck was seen at the dump. But I do not know. I can't tell you the dates and times and exactness because the Chico Police Department has been very unforthcoming with what they'll tell me about the investigation. So the guy Oscar is kind of the prime suspect, but they haven't found anything to put it on. One of the things that the cops shared with me, the Detective Tyler guy, while they were searching for her in the dump, was that, so they didn't even search the dump until like 2 months after they thought that maybe Oscar dumped her there, because they didn't really investigate her there for a while. It's hot as hell in Chico in the summertime, so it was like 110 degrees that week. And, you know, dumps, they run over things with the big crushers. And so they were searching the section of the dump that had been open during the time that Oscar had been there. But he said that it maybe she decomposed and they just never found anything. But I don't know. I don't know if the dogs were getting hit. I don't know. I figure if they had all of Butte County search and rescue with the dogs out, they had a pretty good reason to search. But I never got any more information from that.
While there are any number of potential persons of interest if Dawn's disappearance was foul play, due to her habit of letting acquaintances come and live in her apartment, we were able to establish that at least one person, her ex-husband Dan, was most likely not involved because he lived hours away in Southern California and the two had not had a relationship in many years. So Dan, while a convicted felon for white-collar crimes, had no reason or motive to cause harm to Dawn. But there were plenty of other people to look at, and we asked Christy about how Dawn was meeting these acquaintances she allowed to stay at her home.
Did she meet some guy? She was into all like the dating websites and stuff like that. So I don't know if she found somebody. They wouldn't let us have her cell phone records. The only reason I know about her bank accounts is because I was able to get her mail, the last set of mail. She had a storage unit they wouldn't let me access. You know, without a death certificate, there's not a lot you can really do. There's just no access to any of it. I mean, I couldn't get into a storage locker, and I couldn't get into her bank records, and I couldn't get her cell phone record. They kept asking me, you know, well, you need to bring her in. And I'm like, that's a problem. I don't know where she is. I can't. I want her cell phone record so I can see who she was calling and what she was doing. Police told me that the last call she made was to an Uber, but I don't know. I can't track that. I'd love to talk to the Uber driver. You know, wouldn't that be a good person to interview and stuff like that? But they won't tell me. And I don't know if they even interviewed the Uber driver. I go to the bar. They didn't interview anybody at the bar that they were at all the time. Did anybody have anything to say that way? No, I don't know.
We couldn't help but feel sad for Dawn and wonder what she must have been feeling when it felt like the rug was constantly being pulled out from under her, and she felt like drinking was her only outlet. In everything we learned about Dawn, we went into production of this story feeling like she was someone whose life could have easily taken a different course if there had been just one less tragedy or perceived failure, and she'd been able to grow her self-worth, which she was so deserving of. Betsy shared some of the obstacles and challenges that caused Dawn to feel these things, and told us there weren't many resources available to help her in the local community.
She would get frustrated because I know she would try to go to the one clinic that she could go to because of the insurance situation and financially. And I know she felt like she got the runaround all the time, and she was getting very frustrated and more depressed because she hurt. She hurt. She couldn't sleep. I've taken her to doctor's appointments, and she wasn't very compliant either. She was a hard patient to deal with at the end, honestly. From what I could watch, the doctors kind of had a hard time with her also. She needed a lot of help, and she needed to stay in one place, have somebody coordinate her care kind of thing. Like, you need this for this part and this for this part and this for this part. But she kind of bounced around. So nothing was continuous. They didn't treat her like as a whole person. They just, one person would treat one little thing, just this vicious circle, you know, that she's round and round. She would try to get help, and, you know, we would tell her, you need to get a primary care, you need to have a physical, you need to do just like the normal stuff so you can get a starting point, you know, and then go from there. And she would get frustrated, and rightfully so. It was, especially in this little, there's not a lot of help for people in that situation. So it was It was hard. When the police, you know, when other people say, oh, well, maybe she just wanted to disappear or whatever, I'm like, physically, she could not have done that.
Whatever happened to Dawn, Roger agrees with Betsy that Dawn was not physically capable of going far from home on her own. And if she had done that, she would have been found by now.
But it's as if she was beamed to Mars. You know, people are like, oh, she ran away. People run away, you're going to get found. Someone's going to see you. You're going to use a credit card, a phone. You're going to contact someone you know or in your family. None of that has happened in 2.5 years. I don't think she ran away. She couldn't even drive. Physically, she could not have ridden a bike or walked or a motorcycle. She could not travel well. And so it all goes back to what happened to her. If you're to be murdered or killed either accidentally or intentionally, it's probably by someone that knows you. She lived in Chico in the middle of the town, which is a flat geographic town, and a person who couldn't drive, how far are you going to walk? Not very far. And so it wasn't like she was out in the wilderness or up in the mountains or by the ocean. If she did indeed walk away from her home, fell down drunk, hit her head, and died, someone in 2.5 years will find her remains, her bones. Nothing has been found. Like I said, she did not live in an isolated area. She lived in the middle of town. She was in a neighborhood with houses. The fact that she has completely disappeared off the face of the earth, I discount that scenario because someone walking their dog or hiking or running, a landscape maintenance guy, would run across her remains. That hasn't happened. That's why I just contend that the prospect of her either committing suicide or just wandering off and falling over dead, it's possible, but her body, her remains would be found at some point. And if somebody drove her, a friend or an acquaintance, somebody knows something, but they're certainly not saying anything. But again, her remains somebody would stumble across them in the city of Chico. It's 100,000 people there.
Dawn's mother passed away not too long ago, but her dad is still alive, grieving the death of his wife and disappearance of his daughter, both of whom went through life with a shadow of alcohol dependency following them. We weren't able to reach Dawn's father, Henry, but Betsy told us he really struggles with her disappearance and often doesn't return calls.
She passed away this last spring. I mean, she was a longtime smoker and she just, it was, her health just failed. You know, she was on oxygen and she had a COPD. But Henry took care of her and kept her at home. And he's still in San Jose, same house that they grew up in. And the last time I called and left a message and he didn't call back, I just was down in the area anyway and went to visit and sat with him for a little bit. And he has a really hard time talking about it. He's really struggling. He had a really hard time, you know, even talking to me. He gets pretty broken up.
Of all the people we talked to for interviews in this episode, and those we spoke to in our research, Betsy clearly knew Dawn best, and we wanted her thoughts and reflections on Dawn's life and disappearance.
In my heart, she's part of my family, and always has been. I know definitely she had a hard time growing up, even as a young adult. Just seems like, almost like somebody just kept smacking her down. She'd pop back up and she'd get smacked down and she'd pop back up. She was a really hard worker and like I said, really smart. Some of what's so tragic is that she's really a beautiful girl, funny, sweet, but I think she didn't, you know, she kind of just didn't believe in herself or didn't think she deserved, you know, to be treated well and that kind of thing. I think she had really low self-esteem because she kind of gravitated towards guys that wouldn't treat her nicely. She just kind of couldn't catch a break. It just felt like, again, for how much she had going for her, she just ran up against obstacles constantly. Some of them were of her own making, honestly. Her decision making and stuff later when she was by herself, some of the people that she hung out with weren't the greatest. Her decision making and her thought processes were definitely skewed, you know, the older she got. She really was into like interior design kind of stuff. She was very much into decorating. Well, she graduated with fashion merchandising. So she worked, you know, in retail and stuff, but I think she had more ideas about maybe doing some like interior design stuff that didn't kind of come true. But yeah, when we were younger, that's what she was thinking. She loved to host a party and be the hostess. I know for her family, she liked to do like Christmas and do all the decorations and really deck out her house and do all the cooking. And I know when we first moved back up here to our home now, and Dawn was my daughter's godmother and I was her son's godmother. So when we moved up here, you know, and she got right into my little girl's room and was decorating her room and rearranged everything I had done. She's like, oh no. So it was funny. It was just, she loved to do stuff like that. And, you know, she didn't have a little girl. So she liked to take my little girl to go shopping, or she liked to take her. We have pictures, you know, she would take her at Christmas time and they'd both go sit on Santa's lap. And she liked to do special things with Michelle. So it was really sweet.
Christy acknowledges the possibility that her sister's choices in inviting suspect men into her life could have led to her disappearance and death, or alternately, to her falling off the grid. But she recognizes that other outcomes in Dawn's case are far more likely, though the answers to all of her questions remain unknown and unanswered.
She could be anywhere. She was, you know, making dates on dating websites and going on dates. Maybe she met a date and he took her home. And the first month I was kind of hoping she was going to pop out, hey, I went to rehab, because we were offering a rehab. Go 30 days here, go 60 days here. And then I was like, well, maybe she found Mr. Right and she's on a boat in Bora Bora. But she wouldn't not return her son's phone calls. And her phone, as soon as the battery died, it was useless. Phone's gone. I was never able to get her records. I just appreciate a fresh set of eyes on this. I mean, I knew she was dying alcoholic, and really, she, Selma and Louise did. We got some paperwork from her apartment. I kind of went through her mail and stuff, and she was flat broke and in debt and, you know, all those types of things. But for her to just disappear, just to not know what happened, you know, did she die and Oscar panicked and took her to the dump? Did he kill her? You know, I don't really think he killed her. Did she go with somebody else? I don't know. Did she meet some guy? I just want to know. I just want to know so I can sleep.
So what happened to Dawn Blankenheim in May of 2020? Much of the nation was still in a COVID lockdown at the time of her disappearance. Is it possible that is the reason that no one saw her leave her apartment? Or had she been there at all? There's no proof via eyewitness or surveillance footage that she was ever there after her hospitalization. But Betsy says that she did call her after returning home. And it appeared to her sister and friend as though her apartment was actively being lived in and someone had just left for a short time as if to run an errand. We know that Dawn's health was in peril, and the severity of her disease progression from alcohol was rapidly putting her in a life or death situation. Is it possible she passed away after a medical event, either from too much alcohol consumption or from attempting to detox? It seems that if that were the case, Dawn would have been found by now. Is it possible there was foul play involved in her disappearance? Was Roger right in his theory that there was a physical altercation between one of the acquaintances she was known to be involved with, and she was killed by accident? There doesn't seem to be any clear motive for murder, but it's one possibility that cannot be ruled out. Dawn was in what should have been the best years of her life, watching her son grow up, get married, and have a family, retiring and enjoying time on hobbies and with friends. Her disappearance is so tragic because it feels like she was set up for failure from the start. But Dawn's life was still one worth living, and she deserves to be found, and her loved ones deserve answers as much as any missing person. At the time of her disappearance, Dawn Blankenheim was 53 years old. She was approximately 5'3" tall and weighed around 160 pounds. She had blonde gray hair and blue eyes. Dawn was not capable of walking a long distance at the time of her disappearance and may be in need of medical attention. If you have any information regarding the disappearance of Dawn Blankenheim, You're asked to call the Chico Police Department at 530-897-4900. If you or someone you love is struggling with mental health or substance abuse, there are resources. You can call the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, which is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can call them at 1-800-662-HELP. That's 1-800-662-4357.
Dawn has been missing now for over 2 years with some very interesting facts about her disappearance. It's a fact of life that you can find a bar just about every other corner and probably order a drink. So that, and that's, I think, part of the tragedy of this story is that she was vulnerable to predators. And I do believe that's part of the story. I'm trying really to state facts. And this is not hearsay. These are facts that I witnessed as a friend of Dawn's and an acquaintance of Oscar's, and spent time with both of them in separate scenarios. She was the golden goose. I don't see that he would go or intentionally want to kill the golden goose. Well, and he would be good at trying to paint himself as a victim. And I don't know the details of the Chico Police Department or Butte County Sheriff's Department investigations. I understood, and this is third hand from friends, that they did take her computer, and I don't know about Oscar's, but they certainly would have access to all of her cell phone records, her computer, emails, and there would be documentation of, you know, who she talked to or emailed or texted. It is frustrating as to why or how they could not come up with anything further. Friends and family have just been trying to keep this story alive to see if we could ever solve the mystery of her disappearance.
That brings us to the end of episode 365. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you like our show, please give us a 5-star rating and review. Follow The Vanished on Amazon Music or wherever you get your podcasts. Or you can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus on Apple Podcasts or the Wondery app. Please support us by supporting our sponsors. By supporting them, you help us offer the show for free. Another way you can support the show is by filling out a survey at wondery.com/survey. You can also support the show by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Be sure to tune in next week. We'll be covering a case from Georgia. Thanks for listening.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding in your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.